anything but clipped and measured. As she opened the door, Aurore remembered what Steph had said about hiring a gigolo to lighten Solange up, which put a wide smile on her face as she came face to face with her. "Would you like to sit?" Aurore asked. "Or at least take off your coat?"
"I won't be staying long," Solange said.
"Just say what you have to say." "Not even a glass of wine? Or tea? I have a great collection."
Solange looked at her watch, then cast her glance around the room. "I have work to do."
"I just brewed a pot of chamomile tea. It will help you sleep tonight," Aurore insisted.
"Sure, fine."
Solange took a few paces towards the sofa. Aurore quickly poured her cup and handed it to her in a saucer. "So, that video. Must have been fun snooping around the internet to find it."
Aurore arched up her eyebrows.
"At least I hope you got something out of it."
"I would appreciate it if you didn't speak to me like that."
Solange stood there stiffly in her coat, cup of tea awkwardly in her hands. Aurore felt a little sorry for her and decided to go about things in a different manner. Even though Solange was so easy to tease, Aurore would try a less antagonizing, but more friendly and congenial approach.
"Okay. We got off on the wrong foot, and I apologize. Will you please sit for a minute so we can talk?"
She used her softest tone of voice, the one that had gotten many doors to open for her over the years. Solange hesitated, heaved a deep sigh, then put the cup down and shrugged out of her coat. Mission one accomplished. Getting the chief of staff to relax around her was the first step in Aurore's new, gentler approach.
"For your information, I got no pleasure whatsoever out of searching for that video. I fervently wished it was not a task I had to burden myself with, but someone had to do it."
"Why?"
Aurore couldn't help but notice how tightly Solange's stark white blouse was tucked into the waistband of her pressed skirt. Everything about her was so rigid. Aurore might have gotten her to take the first step, but many more intermediate steps would be necessary to have Solange unwind enough so they could have the kind of conversation Aurore was aiming for.
"Why? Isn't that obvious? You put the president in danger."
"Oh, really?
Well, good thing she has you to save her from the great danger I represent."
Aurore couldn't help the snark. Solange shook her head. Aurore regrouped. It was difficult to keep herself in check in Solange's presence. The woman's icy attitude got under her skin. Time to douse her with some warmth again and see where that got her.
"Up until things went a little awry, I really enjoyed getting to know you better the other night," she said.
Solange squinted, as though she had to parse the words Aurore had just spoken.
"Despite your obvious desire for me not to be there," Aurore continued.
"I know, I went a little too far. Stephanie and I, we're like chalk and cheese, and let's just say she knows how to push my buttons. But she has apologized, and we've moved on."
What world did Solange live in? Did she really believe Steph's apology held up after Solange had shown Dominique that video?
The animosity in the air was quite palpable.
"I assume I'm not here to talk about Stephanie."
Solange reached for her cup and took a sip. She held it near her face as though wanting to hide behind it.
"Not directly, no. I have asked you here to talk about me."
Aurore ventured a smile. Solange gave a tiny hint of smile back.
At least, that was what Aurore thought she saw appear behind the cup. "I will keep my distance from the Élysée and from Steph. At least I assume that's what the president wants. But I need your word that you'll never use this video of me against my candidate. Because it has nothing whatsoever to do with her."
"Oh, so she is your candidate now. I thought you said you were only her non-political advisor."
"Things have taken a turn."
"Can you look me in the eye and promise me you're not plotting anything against the president?"
"How do you mean? What would I be plotting?"
"You turn up out of nowhere just as this bill on donor sperm gets proposed. A few days later, the president finds herself having dinner with a former porn star. That's a bit too much of a coincidence for my liking."
Aurore chuckled.
"For the record, I'm hardly a porn star. Did you watch that video? I mean, back then I'd like to believe I knew what I was doing, but I had a lot to learn.
Solange did manage more than just a hint of smile now.
A career in adult entertainment was never really what I was after. Although I was very happy to help out a friend and make a movie that was a bit more, let's say, female-friendly.
She tilted her head and even managed to hold Solange's gaze for a few seconds.
I met Steph through mutual friends. I have no ulterior motives. Unlike you, I like her.
What about the Riviera bill? What are your motives with that?
My motives?
Aurore clasped a hand to her chest.
I simply want same-sex couples to be able to get inseminated in their own country without having to go through the administrative, financial, and emotional hassle of doing it outside France. Very simply put, I want for everyone to be equal. Hand on my heart. That is truly all I want.
Do you have children? Solange asked, catching Aurore off guard.
No.
The place kind of looks as though you would have grandchildren, although upon closer look, it doesn't really appear to be child-proofed at all. My bad.
Aurore pulled her lips into a grin. She thought it best to let the comment pass. How about you?
You might have noticed I'm pretty much married to my job. I have no time for a partner, let alone children.
You weren't always chief of staff.
Indeed. But it takes a lot of work, time, and effort to become chief of staff.
I can imagine.
Aurore exhaled. She was starting to get the impression Solange wouldn't mind staying a bit longer. The woman probably didn't have many semi-personal conversations.
I too researched you. However, unlike what you found out about me, all of me on display for all the world to see, I didn't find a single thing about your personal life, which leads me to believe you must not have one.
Aurore watched the blush that had crept up Solange's neck since Aurore had mentioned the video. Solange might sit there solemnly claiming she didn't watch the video at all, but Aurore didn't believe a word of that.
Ah, so you did do your research on me.
You're an intriguing woman. I wanted to know more.
The blush on Solange's neck seemed to intensify. She drank from her tea.
Personal relationships have never come first in my life. I was always too ambitious, too something for most. I've had liaisons, of course, but I'm always discreet.
You never get lonely?
Solange shrugged.
What is loneliness, really? It's a weakness I don't allow myself.
You look as though you don't afford yourself many weaknesses.
To be where I am at my age, I've made some enemies over the years. I can't afford to have many weaknesses. I wouldn't be able to serve the president if I had.
It's all about Dominique Laroche for you. Your entire life revolves around her. No wonder you despise Steph so much.
For now, yes.
Do you have political ambitions yourself?
God, no. I do my best work behind the scenes. I learned from a young age it's best to leave the spotlight to people like Dominique.
So what's the end goal for Solange Garceau?
My number one goal is to get Dominique re-elected. Your candidate may try to stop me.
Us.
But I will do whatever it takes.
Does that include incriminating Anne Riviere with a damaging video of one of her advisors?
No, that's not what I meant.
Solange fixed her gaze on Aurore's.
I promise you.
Aurore only had her gut instinct to go on. It wasn't giving her much information on whether Solange Garceau was trustworthy.
I appreciate that.
Solange finally put her cup down.
Do you want some more tea?
Aurore asked. Solange glanced at her cup, then at her watch.
You did say it would help me sleep. I can use all the help I can get.
Aurore poured more tea. Step two was in the bag. Solange had already stayed much longer than she had ever expected. And Aurore hadn't lied when she'd said she was an intriguing character. It also seemed she was someone who didn't mind spending some more time with Aurore.
What do you do to relax?
Aurore asked, genuinely worried.
Please don't you start as well. Domin- I mean the president.
was on my case about not taking enough time to relax. I have a treadmill at home. I run. I let my mind wander. And I watch that TV show about cats before I go to sleep. She reached for her cup. Now I'm also drinking chamomile tea. She shot Aurore an unexpected wink over the rim of the cup. There's really nothing to worry about. After she swallowed, she said, You seem pretty busy yourself. What do you do to unwind? A smile formed on Aurore's lips. She might not have melted Solange just yet, but she had cracked the icy surface a little. I see friends. I go to the movies and exhibitions and the opera. I listen to music. I go for long walks in the woods around the corner. Ah, yes, the Bois de Boulogne. That has a certain reputation. In case you're wondering, I don't partake in what goes on in the woods at night. For all my talk about sex on the radio, I don't have nearly enough of it myself. Oh, shoot. This was something Aurore would easily exclaim to a friend like Camille, but not to the chief of staff of the president, who'd come to her home to negotiate terms on a possibly embarrassing video. Solange stiffened in her chair. It was only now that she had her guard fully up again that Aurore could see how relaxed her body language had previously become. I am very sorry to hear that. The snippiness hadn't taken over her tone completely yet, but it was skirting the edges. I should go. I have some things to do. And after having had that tea, Aurore said, If you take a hot bath when you get home, you'll be fast asleep half an hour later. Solange rose and put on her coat. Thank you for coming by. We should, have another informal meeting soon to discuss that bill. Solange turned around and looked Aurore squarely in the eye. We should, she said. Dominique.
Where's Steph?
Didier asked.
She promised she'd be here, Lisa said.
If she promised, then she'll be here soon, Dominique said, even though she wasn't so sure Steph would indeed show up. Then again, she wouldn't break a promise to the children. She might be thunderously mad at Dominique, but she wouldn't let Didier and Lisa be the victim of that.
Are you having a fight?
Didier asked. Dominique chuckled. What? They were growing up so quickly. Nothing got past them. No, honey. What makes you think that?
Yesterday, Daddy and Angelique were fighting, Lisa said. If you and Steph are fighting as well, then maybe that means you and Daddy should be back together. Because you no longer fight with each other.
Grown-ups fight once in a while, just like you two get into fights. Then you make up, and you all still love each other the same after.
That's not true, Didier said. Once you and Daddy started fighting, you didn't love each other anymore.
Some fights can't be resolved. That's true. Dominique wondered whether her heaviness of spirit was weighing on her children, whether they could sense it. She could sure do with Steph arriving home right about now. She always knew how to put a smile on their faces, and to distract them from whatever was bothering their mother at the time.
Can we play on the PlayStation even though Steph's not here yet?
Lisa asked. Of course. Dominique didn't have it in her to say no, or to set the time limit she usually did when it came to video games.
Sweet.
Didier opened some drawers, unearthed all the necessary equipment, and less than a minute later they both sat glued to the screen. She looked at her children and wondered what her life would have been without them. It was unimaginable. She would need to take a stand on the Riviera bill soon. It was a no-brainer, really. But sometimes Dominique felt as though she'd led the wrong party, even more so since she had met Steph. First thing tomorrow, she would ask Solange to draw up a statement, and she would call a meeting with the MLR leadership. Being president made her party leader, but it wasn't as straightforward as that. Dissidents were always waiting in the wings.
Sorry I'm late, little monsters.
Steph dashed into the room.
But I'm ready for cuddles now.
Lisa and Didier hesitated for a split second, then threw their controllers to the floor and jumped onto Steph. The sight brought a wide smile to Dominique's face. At least things were hunky-dory between Steph and her children. Didier and Lisa adored her partner, and she adored them right back. Why couldn't all love be as simple as that? She adored Steph, and she assumed Steph still adored her. Maybe the issue lay with her having to assume it. Was she no longer sure of Steph's love for her? After all Steph had done for her, the sacrifices she had made. Of course Steph still loved her. But maybe she didn't like her as much anymore. Maybe Dominique, as president, had made too many concessions to her party. Maybe befriending a full-blood socialist like Orosov had made Steph remember her old political ideals, the ones that resonated most with her true self. I'll play with you in a second, Steph said as she wrestled herself free from their hugs. I'm just going to say hello to your mum first. Lisa and Didier went back to their game, and Steph plonked down next to her. Hey. She kissed Dominique on the cheek. But it was a performance kiss, so as not to alarm the kids. How are they?
They missed you,
Dominique whispered. And she might as well have said I instead of they. After Didier and Lisa had been picked up by their father to go back to the house where they lived while their mother was president, Dominique didn't feel like going straight back to work. Where are you going? She asked when Steph was about to leave the room. Out, Steph said. I feel like I haven't seen you in days. That's because you haven't. Steph leaned her hip against the edge of the sofa. I haven't been in much of a mood to see you. Can we talk about that, perhaps? I don't know, can we? Do you have the time? I checked your schedule and didn't say you were free after the children's visit, so... They asked if we were fighting. That got Steph's attention. Really? Are we? Not fighting as such. More like sulking, Steph said. Look, babe, my hands are pretty much tied here. What do you want me to do? Steph sighed. I want you to make me feel like I matter to you. I know you think that asking me to marry you every other week is what it takes, but it's not. On the contrary, it makes me feel like you want to own me even more. Already, I don't seem to have much of my old self left.
Oh, babe.
Steph's harsh words were a shock to Dominique's system.
You let Solange undermine me every chance she gets. You made me apologize to her, and then she pulled that stunt with a video. But that's just the small stuff. Things I would be able to shrug off easily if everything was right between us. But it's not. We haven't even properly talked about the Rivière bill yet, which is something that is important to me.
Shall we sit? Dominique needed a time out. She hadn't expected all of this. Steph sat on the carpet near the door.
I'm going to talk to the leadership tomorrow. I'll make a statement.
I don't care about the leadership. I need to know what you think before they try and sway you.
You know what I think. I want this bill to pass.
Then make it happen. You're the president, for crying out loud. You won the presidency because you stood for equality. Time to put your money where your mouth is.
I will.
It was Dominique's every intention to make it happen. But she had no choice but to play the game of politics. Besides, this conversation wasn't really about the bill. It was about the differences between her and Steph that seemed to have grown exponentially over the past few weeks, or had perhaps been better highlighted by the turn of events.
I promise you that, one way or another, I'll make it happen.
Dominique rose from her chair and sat next to Steph on the floor. Now tell me about you. What can I do to make you feel better? Steph sighed.
There's just no getting away from any of this for me. Even at work, I don't feel like the person I used to be. Because everyone sees me differently. I just really need a break.
Dominique brought a hand to Steph's neck. Do you want to go to the house in Juan-le-Pin? Steph shook her head.
That's not the kind of break I mean.
Something tightened in Dominique's stomach.
Then what do you mean?
Her fingers kneaded Steph's shoulders. She needed to keep contact somehow.
Tell me honestly, if you had to choose between Solange and me, if it came to that, who would you choose?
Dominic scoffed. What kind of a question is that?
A very simple one.
A very manipulative one, if you ask me. You both represent very different things to me, Stephanie. You are my life partner. When I ask you to marry me, it's not out of guilt or out of some desire to own more of you. It's because I love you. Because you are the most wonderfully complex person I've ever met. Because from the moment I met you, I knew. I was lost, and I knew I would be until we were together. It's because we belong together. However mismatched anyone else might find us. I know in my heart we belong together. I've known it since you first came to my office. I knew it when we decided we could never be together, and I still know it now. Dominique slipped her fingers underneath the collar of Steph's shirt and dug her fingertips into her flesh. I like to think you know it too. See, Steph shrugged free of her touch. This is what you're good at. This is why you're president. You give excellent speeches with a flair for drama and plenty of emotion in your voice. But what does it all really stand for? What does it change for me that you say these things? You're the kind of person who can deliver an impassioned speech at the drop of a hat. Dominic shuffled backwards a bit. As she sat there on the floor, she felt the distance between them increase. Because Steph was right. Dominique could say all the words she wanted if Steph didn't feel them, didn't connect with them any longer. Then how could she possibly make her believe in them again? I mean every word I say, Dominique said.
Oh, I have no doubt about that. I know that you love me. Love is not the issue here. I just wish you could see that.
Then what is the issue? Support? Steph looked at her, tears glistening in the corners of her eyes.
I've been single most of my adult life, and in all that time, I've never felt lonelier than I do here in my gilded cage. I can't go anywhere without taking some Secret Service guys with me. I can't go to a restaurant without a couple of paps wanting to snap a picture of my face. All things I could live with when I felt you were on my side. But these days, it feels like I've given up my freedom, which I've always valued above everything else, for nothing.
Dominique inhaled and exhaled slowly. She was losing her grip on this conversation and didn't like where it was headed. I'm doing my best to understand where this is coming from. A week ago, we were doing fine. Or so it seemed to me, at least. What changed? What happened?
I think that about sums it all up. The fact that you don't have a clue and didn't see this coming. Having you at my throat because of that video was the final straw. A video that did not need to be unearthed by anyone, I might stress. That never even needed to be discussed. Why don't you just admit here and now that I'm more of a nuisance to you than anything else? If you get rid of me, which is what Solange wants, for your information, the path to re-election lies wide open. You can move your politics to the right again and go to war with the left. I won't stand in your way. I won't make any demands of you. You can capture the hearts of the true conservatives in this country. Show some remorse about having a dalliance with a woman and just continue doing what really sets your heart on fire. Being president of the republic.
Dominique pushed herself up and straightened her clothes.
Do you have any idea of what you're saying? She squared her shoulders. First of all, I won't be spoken to like that, not even by you. Second, I think you might be right. I think you... We do need a break.
Steph pushed herself up.
Fine. Tears streamed down her face. I'll pack my bags.
Dominique watched Steph storm off.
How had things spiraled out of control so quickly? And was there any truth to what Steph had just said?
If Dominique was going to save this relationship, she would have to examine Steph's words carefully, instead of dismissing them as utter nonsense. Steph. Steph punched in the code to Juliet and Nadia's building, squeezed herself and her hastily packed suitcase into the tiny elevator, then knocked on the front door of their apartment. It was only when her knuckles touched the wood that she came to her senses. She had left the Élysée. she had left Dominique.
If only Dominique had given her something other than one of her speeches. If only she'd looked Steph in the eye and made her see that she understood what she was going through.
But maybe it was too much to ask of a woman whose head was perpetually elsewhere. Maybe Steph had demanded too much of herself as well.
The door swung open, and Nadia stood in front of her. Steph hadn't seen her friend in weeks, perhaps even months.
Come here.
Nadia tugged Steph inside, brushed off the hood she'd pulled over her head, and embraced her in one of those typical Nadia hugs. One that melted Steph to the core with the friendship she'd missed, and all the other things it reminded her of. Their dog Phoenix came to greet Steph in the hallway. Juliette brought him into the office often enough for him to recognize Steph and gave her an enthusiastic lick of the hand.
Juliette's out, which is good, so you and I can talk, if you want to, of course.
In that moment, Steph wanted to remain in Nadia's soft embrace forever, until Juliette returned and removed her wife's arms from around her. But Nadia let go of her, put a hand in the small of her back and led her into the living room. How long had it been since she'd been in her best friend's apartment? Steph saw Juliette at work almost every day, but gone were the days when after hours they would head down to Le Comptoir together for a few drinks to let off steam.
I'm sorry for being such a stranger, Nods.
God, I've missed you. You have no idea how much.
I've missed you too.
Nadia gave her a warm smile.
Drink? God, yes. I'll take anything.
I have an open bottle of Sancerre in the fridge.
I'll take the bottle,
Steph joked. Coming right up.
While Nadia busied herself with getting drinks, Phoenix put his head on Steph's knee. She petted him and thought of our cat Pierrot, whom she'd had to leave behind. She was sure he was well taken care of, but she missed him nonetheless. Would he be looking for her? Would he be sleeping at Dominique's feet? The image of Dominique sleeping with Pierrot next to her made her swallow a sob in her throat. Nadia handed her a glass of cool wine, and Steph took a sip.
Thank you for letting me stay here.
Don't mention it. You can stay here as long as you like.
Juliet is my boss, so I don't know how long I'll be able to hack it.
Sometimes it feels like she's my boss, too, so we can gang up on her together. It'll be fun.
How are you doing? Tell me everything, Nods.
Nadia tilted her head.
I'm doing just fine. I can give you the lowdown on my quiet, rather boring life if you want to, of course. But perhaps you want to tell me about what's going on with you first?
Steph drank again.
I snapped. I lost it. And I left.
Nadia grinned.
Very descriptive. I can just picture it all happening before my eyes.
Steph chuckled.
You've been there, Nods. You know what it's like when you're not on the same wavelength anymore. When it feels like your partner doesn't have your back any longer.
That's true. Nadia nodded. Juliet and I have indeed been there. Talking to friends about it helped to put things in perspective. Talking to one friend in particular. One very wise for her age.
She winked at Steph.
I feel like I've lost touch with that person as well. I know this will sound dramatic, but when I look in the mirror, I still see me. But it doesn't feel like me anymore. I've become this yay-saying monkey. A marionette to be paraded when needed. A pair of loving arms for Dominique to fall into when she comes to bed late at night. All the things I am now are so far removed from who I used to be. I'm not saying I can't handle a bit of growth as a person, and that I haven't evolved for the better. Being in a relationship has matured me and made me see things from the other's perspective.
But by God, Nods, I'm so sick of all the pomp and circumstance.
But most of all, I miss her. Dominique was always busy and that suited me because I'm not the type to succumb to the urge to merge, but I need some more than I've been given. And we haven't even talked about politics yet and possible re-election.
I can imagine. I often think of you, Steph. I picture you wandering through the corridors of the Élysée. Something that's hard to imagine, but...
She fixed her gaze on Steph.
You love her.
I do.
Steph had just literally said the words to Dominique. Love was not the issue.
But I think I've learned that love isn't everything.
It most certainly is not.
Nadia briefly sucked her bottom lip into her mouth.
Has she disrespected you? Crossed certain boundaries?
Steph thought for a moment.
She has.
Being scolded like a child remained a sore point for Steph.
I sometimes think I bring it on myself, you know. Because when you're...
She curled her fingers into air quotes.
First lady. There isn't much margin for error. I have to be on my best behavior all the time.
None of us are at our best all the time. Surely Dominique isn't either.
No. And she gets judged even more harshly. But she stood for office, I didn't.
But you helped her get elected.
And I did.
Steph put her glass of wine down and rubbed the heels of her hands over her eyes.
I don't know what I'm going to do. I'm going to need some time to figure this out.
It's not a definite break, then. Steph shrugged.
Who's to say?
You are, I presume.
Not just me. It depends on Dominique as well.
She knitted her fingers together behind her head.
She kept asking me to marry her. In a way, that set me off most of all. I thought it was a joke at first. I took it in jest, and even mocked her a little. Now I'm left wondering what it really meant, and I keep thinking that is not a question I should be asking myself. I wonder whether if I had felt like she really meant it. If her words and behavior had aligned more with the question, whether I would have said yes. I don't know. I don't know much anymore, and that's what gets me. It's not supposed to be a question of this magnitude. Whether I want to stay with her, I mean.
You've had to adapt and change at a faster pace than you could manage.
It's only normal some big questions pop up. The presidency has changed Dominique as well. How could it not?
It's very plausible that two people who change that quickly lose each other along the way.
The real question is if you can find each other again.
Yeah. Steph reached for her wine glass.
We'll have to see about that.
Camille.
I'm starting to feel guilty,
Aurore said. She and Camille walked arm in arm in the Bois de Boulogne near Aurore's apartment.
Steph has moved out of the Élysée.
Surely there's nothing for you to feel guilty about.
Maybe, but I don't know. When I went to dinner, there surely was some tension brewing. I wrongly assumed it was tension between Solange and Steph, but clearly more was bubbling underneath the surface.
There usually is. Camille inhaled the forest air. I don't know the details. Zoya talked to her on the phone yesterday.
Should I call her?
Aurore asked.
Or would that be inappropriate?
Why would it be inappropriate? Aurore sighed.
That whole thing with the video. I promised to keep my distance from Steph as well as the Élysée. I promised Solange. I'm not sure it's a promise I can break.
Only you can decide that.
Maybe Steph will call you. What will you do then? Not pick up because of a promise you made to Solange,
who sounds more and more like Steph's arch-nemesis than someone who has her best interests at heart.
Of course I would take her call. I would love to talk to her. We have a certain rapport.
Funny, that's what Zoya has said about her as well.
She's easy to talk to, unlike others in the president's entourage.
By that you mean Solange Garceau?
I had her over at my place, to call a truce.
Are you kidding me? Camille shouldn't be so shocked. She'd known Aurore for decades, and nothing about her should shock her after all this time. After all, this was a woman who in her early 20s had found herself on the set of a pornographic movie.
It wasn't too bad, until I made the fatal mistake of saying the word sex, which clammed her up tighter than an uncooked mussel. But we had a bit of a chat. Some warming up happened.
Camille stopped in her tracks.
What is it?
Aurore asked.
Please don't tell me you're getting the hots for her.
Camille scanned her friend's face. Aurore knitted her brows together.
What? No. No way, Camille. You are barking up the wrong tree so much I'm not even sure it's a tree anymore.
Good. I hope you've learned your lesson after Vivienne.
Solange is nothing like Vivienne.
Aurore said.
Granted, they might both be straight, and we know I have a bit of a penchant for that. But Vivienne was warm, exuberant, and effortlessly sexy. Solange Garceau is the polar opposite of all those things.
Just checking, Camille said.
I thought you held me in higher esteem than that.
Aurore said in a mock admonishing tone.
How would I even go about it?
The woman is as unapproachable as the guards outside the Élysée. In fact, I think she has her own guards watching over her emotions, and every time she's tempted to show too much, they rein her in.
She represents a challenge for you, Camille said, which is what worries me.
A bit too much of a challenge, even for me. I like to get a little something in return for my affections, and I doubt Solange has anything at all to give.
I've never met her, and I'm not keen to.
You mean she wasn't hovering in the vicinity when you and Zoya visited the Élysée?
She must have had something better to do that day.
Poor Steph. My theory is that Solange dislikes her so much because she represents everything she is not.
Aurore said. Maybe. I just hope she and Dominique can work things out.
Imagine if they separated officially. It wouldn't be the first time a sitting president split from his companion.
True, but this would be different. The far right would have too much of a field day pointing out that lesbian relationships don't work out.
The MLR would be delighted to not have a practicing lesbian as a party leader anymore.
It would just be negative publicity for lesbians in general.
Camille chuckled. This is what happens when the president's a lesbian. She is doomed to represent all of us, and she must uphold our images at all times.
Your image, maybe. She doesn't want anything to do with mine,
Aurore said.
But enough about lesbians in the public eye. How are things at work? Still being persecuted for being one? A lesbian, I mean.
Yes. I am beginning to think that having a lesbian president might have enraged quite a few straight men.
As if it's nothing but an insult to their masculinity. I've told you before and I'm telling you again, men with small penises will instigate the apocalypse.
Small penises that need to be compensated for with large inflated egos.
I agree. It won't take much to upset their masculinity enough to trigger a nuclear war.
Or just ignore climate change and wait until we're all burnt to a crisp.
Aurore shook her head. If only what we're saying were nothing but a joke.
That's what I think every morning when I arrive at work. When I check my desk for any pieces of paper containing some lovely name-calling words. Not that I take the word dyke as an insult. I am one, after all. But I wonder what's in someone's mind when they put pen to paper and write it down.
You can be sure that whoever wrote this is extremely sexually frustrated. A happy, fulfilled person isn't going to waste their time insulting others.
Aurore gave Camille's arm a squeeze.
You know the worst homophobes are usually closet cases.
Or religious zealots.
They're not mutually exclusive.
Camille shook her head. When I hold little Emma in my arms, I worry for her future.
That's natural, but really, you shouldn't worry for her. Despite all that goes on in the world, this is a good time to be alive. Maybe Emma will invent something important in her life. Something that will change the destiny of humankind. Every child that is born represents new hope for the future. That's the way I choose to look at it.
Aurore turned to Camille.
And before you say that's because I don't have children or grandchildren, I have plenty of noisy little humans in my family. Little humans I care very much about.
I would never accuse you of not caring enough about anything, Aurore.
You've always been my compass for caring. Your left-wing compass, even when you were surrounded by right-wing politicians.
My example of successful lesbianism when I was still deep in the clutches of heterosexual marriage.
Well, I've never really set you a good example of what a long-term relationship looks like. If anything, you are my guiding light when it comes to that these days. How is the lovely Zoya?
She's good. Thinking of Zoya always brought a smile to Camille's face. She's a little homesick.
Maybe even more than a little. How does it make you feel?
Camille shrugged.
She moved here for me, hence I am the direct cause of our homesickness. But I can't let that get to me too much, because we're so in love, and what's the alternative?
She paused for a minute, and was grateful Aurore let her have some time to think before speaking again.
I'll make a patriotic French woman out of her yet. You make her happy. Even someone as jaded by love as me can see that.
Speaking of being jaded, what are we going to do about that?
How do you mean?
I don't really know if you want a relationship or not, Aurore.
You always sabotage everything from the start by picking the wrong woman. But that's just the thing. I don't feel like I'm the one who picks the woman. It's the other woman who chooses me.
Kami chuckled. But you let her, even though you know very well you shouldn't.
You have a point. For all my smarts, I let them walk all over me. I've asked myself why many a time. You're a scientist. Maybe you have the answer.
It could simply be that you just haven't come across the right woman for you yet.
Kami was beginning to feel sorry for her friend.
Look at me and Zoya. We're not exactly spring chickens. So there's hope for me yet. As long as you stay away from straight women.
Kami bumped her hips into Aurore's. They walked in companionable silence for a while. A silence during which Kami concluded that, even though she had trouble at work, and she was worried about Zoya's homesickness, and the news about Steph escaping the Élysée had upset her, a walk in the woods with her good friend made life seem perfectly all right for now.
Zoya.
Come to the office anyway, Steph had said. It's about time I introduced you to my bosses, although I guess I should say partners these days. Little habits die hard.
That was how Zoya found herself in Steph's office at Barbier & Cyr, the PR agency that had gotten Dominique Laroche elected. She was supposed to interview the owners, Juliette Barbier and Claire Cyr, and if lucky, get a few sound bites from Steph. But with Steph and Dominique's relationship currently being in tatters, the timing wasn't right for any of that.
Swanky digs, Zoya said as she looked around Steph's office. Becoming first lady got me an upgrade.
Steph kissed her hello by the door, then closed it behind her.
Let's talk in private for a bit. Juliette and Claire both have a tendency to claim the spotlight.
Zoya sat down and scanned Steph's face. She looked as though she hadn't slept in a few days.
She probably hadn't.
How are you doing?
Steph pulled her shoulders into a shrug.
You know.
We don't have to talk about it.
That's not then.
Steph relaxed her shoulders.
Tell me about you. Have you talked to Camille?
Zoya nodded. I have. She was very understanding. In fact, I didn't have to say much. She'd sussed it out already. It's a load off.
That's good.
Steph looked pensive.
What is it? Zoya asked.
I know I said I didn't want to talk about it, but what you just told me about Camille, about her knowing what was going on with you without you having to tell her, that's exactly what's wrong between Dominique and me.
Are you sure about that?
How do you mean?
Until I talked to Camille, I was pretty convinced I hid my homesickness well. Until it turned out, I didn't. We all give ourselves away much more than we like to believe, Steph. That's what I've taken away from that chat with Camille.
Because Camille has time to notice these things about you. You actually spend more than the odd half hour together every other day.
Camille has plenty of her own worries as well, believe me.
Zoya cleared her throat.
It would be ludicrous to compare Camille's job with Dominique's, but it hasn't exactly been a bed of roses lately.
What's going on?
Despite her own worries, Steph seemed genuinely interested.
Harassment and homophobia at the CNRS.
No bloody way.
Oh yes, Zoya nodded. We're putting a follow together.
She held her hands apart.
It's this sick already.
That's unacceptable for a government institution.
I would say it's unacceptable for any workplace.
Of course. I guess I've always been spoiled. This was my first job out of college. Can you believe that? I've been surrounded by lesbians my entire adult life, professionally and privately.
You live the dream?
I nearly screwed it up when I slept with Claire. But she was in more trouble than I was.
Steph shot Zoya a wink. For a split second, the Steph she'd first met a year and a half ago shone through.
Fascinating background information for the piece I'm about to do.
Zoya was doubly looking forward to meeting Claire Cyr now.
This can't be mentioned on camera, of course.
No, but it will be a nice tidbit to keep in the back of my mind while I interview Claire.
All jokes aside, I'm really sorry Camille has to go through that.
She paused.
I could talk to some people.
We're dealing with it. These hate crimes will not go unpunished. I can promise you that.
Give me a shout if you need help.
Steph's phone rang. She picked up.
We're coming.
She informed whoever was on the other side and hung up.
Someone's impatient.
She painted a smile on her face.
Let's go meet the boss ladies, shall we?
The Barbier & Cyr founders were both stunning in their own way, but because of what Steph had said earlier, Zoya mostly couldn't keep her eyes off Claire.
They shook hands and exchanged pleasantries, and Zoe was glad she didn't have a camera person with her, that they could keep this informal for now, and she could think a little more about the piece she wanted to make. She could change her angle from the agency that led La Roche to victory to the agency led by two out lesbians that led La Roche to victory.
"Let me sum up my bosses in a nutshell for you," Steph said, glee in her eyes.
Zoya could so easily see why Steph hadn't wanted to give up her job when she became First Lady. These were her friends, people she'd known long before Dominique La Roche came along, amongst whom she could just be herself.
Claire here is about to get married, and has turned into the very cliché of a bridezilla. I hope to introduce you to her fiancé Margot sometime, who is a grounded, quiet, and sane woman who chooses not to get carried away by marriage preparations.
Félicitations, Zoya said in her best French.
She was always very grateful when French people wanted to speak English with her.
Listen to anything Steph tells you about me. She's not the biggest romantic Paris has seen.
Steph quirked up her eyebrows.
I guess that's true. Either way, we're very happy that Claire is off the shelf. For the longest time, we believed she was too high maintenance to keep any decent woman. But it turns out there's a sock for every old slipper.
Steph grinned. She was in her element. The same could be said for you, Claire offered, while tucking a blonde strand of hair behind her ear.
We'll have to see about that, Steph said.
Steph likes to aim high, Juliet cut in. She was never going to settle just for anyone. It had to be a right-wing candidate for the presidency.
This is what Zoya missed so much about being away from home. Easy camaraderie. Friends to crack jokes with when times were tough. Steph was in a bad place right now, but she still managed to jest with her friends. Because that was what you did when you didn't want to sit at home and mope. Humor between friends could solve so many things. And if not solve them, at least make them bearable. As Zoya looked over the three friends, she decided this was what she needed. A group of friends like this. Perhaps even a work environment similar to this. Maybe this was the place for her. She liked the vibe here, and journalism wasn't that far removed from PR. They were both a way of communicating, often massaging the truth to make it palatable for a big audience. Zoya had dealt with her fair share of spin back in the day. She felt a tingle in her belly and made a mental note to discuss it with Camille as soon as she got home.
These days I would happily settle for any of your significant others who are not in the public eye.
Steph glanced at Zoya.
Juliet and her lovely wife Nadia have taken me in during these hard times of mine, which means we drink a lot of wine in the evening. Juliet tried to cook beef bourguignon last night because she thought it would cheer me up. While it did anything but, sorry Jules, the meat was just a tad too black and dry for my taste.
I did my best, but I was too rushed to put the love it required into my dish.
That and you'd polished off the better half of a bottle of wine before you even started.
Only because I didn't want you to have to drink it all on your own. It was an act of friendship, and you know it.
Thank goodness you can now just order the most delicious beef bourguignon from an app on your phone and have it delivered to your home 30 minutes later. Don't we live in a wonderful world?
Steph said.
I'm really pleased to meet you, Zoya said, a rush of warm possibility making its way through her. I'm still quite new to Paris, and I'm always delighted to meet interesting, successful people like yourself.
Steph tells us you were quite the success back in Australia, with your own TV show and all that. Was it hard to leave that behind? Claire asked.
It wasn't easy, Zoya said. But love is more important.
Wait until you meet Camille. Granted, she does have an MLR pedigree, but I think she's outgrown most of it by now. Zoya has been a good influence, Steph said. You know what? We should all get together sometime. Have dinner. I could do with a nice meal surrounded by my friends. It's been too long.
Zoya spotted an opportunity. You should all come to us. I'll cook. I won't attempt beef bourguignon, I promise.
She's a great cook, so at least the food will be good,
Steph said, eyeing Juliet. They all agreed to the idea, and after they had chatted for a while longer, Steph took Zoya aside and said,
Let's ask Aurore as well. I'll be damned if I stop seeing her just because Solange Bloody Garceau wants me to.
Aurore stood at Solange's front door,
She waited to knock. She was frankly still recovering from having received the invitation to meet Solange at her home in Belleville. She was expecting crisp whites and stark blacks, clean lines, and every square millimeter of space to be used in the spirit of maximum efficiency. As her hand rose to rap on the door, a snippet of the conversation she'd had with Camille in the Bois de Boulogne slipped through her mind. Camille had truly been barking up the wrong tree, she reassured herself. Aurore's knuckles had barely touched the wood when the door swung open. "Come in," she said. For once, Solange wasn't dressed in her black-and-white uniform, but she was wearing jeans and a t-shirt. It made her look like a light version of herself. Aurore believed she could deal with Solange light better. Aurore was led through a small hallway into the living room where, in accordance with her expectations, everything was arranged just so, apart from a stack of papers and a bright pink folder on the coffee table. But very much against her expectations, Solange's living room was decorated with Scandinavian-style wooden furniture, a cozy rug, and a dimly lit lamp. The only black-and-white objects in the room were the pictures of various European landmarks on the walls. "This is not what I had expected." Aurore slipped out of her coat and hung it on the back of a chair. "What had you expected?" Was that a grin on Solange's face? "Something very different than this. You have a wonderful home." "Thanks. Pity I don't get to spend that much time here." Aurore was treated to an actual smile. "Can I get you a drink? Red, white, coffee, tea?" Aurore was taller than most women, and only now noticed the few inches of height Solange had lost by not wearing her trademark, impossibly high heels. In fact, she wasn't wearing any footwear at all. A barefoot Solange Garceau. That was hardest to believe of all. As if for the evening, Solange had taken off her armor. "Red, please." Solange nodded. "Please, sit down. Make yourself comfortable." While Aurore nestled in Solange's plush sofa and let her gaze wander around the living room, her eye fell on a framed picture of Solange and Dominique Laroche. Maybe Solange was so relaxed because Steph and Dominique were currently not living under the same roof. Maybe she had succeeded in one of her biggest challenges, driving them apart. But no, Aurore corrected her thinking. She should give Solange the benefit of the doubt. She had invited her into her home, after all. She doubted that was a courtesy Solange extended to many political enemies. "Here you go. It's a 2010 Centimillion." Aurore quirked up her eyebrows. "Sounds like something for a special occasion." "Maybe it will be." Solange sat down in the corner of the sofa and drew one leg underneath the other. She was the very picture of relaxation. "Why do I get the feeling you're about to make me an offer that will be hard to refuse?" This could all be an act, of course. A way to throw Aurore off guard, butter her up and get her to agree to something she would never consider agreeing to if regular Solange was sitting next to her. "No offers just yet. First things first." Solange adjusted her weight on the sofa. "Will you accept my apology for leaving your flat the other day as though you had greatly offended me?"
"I believe I did greatly offend you."
Aurore sipped from the excellent wine and glanced at Solange over the rim of her glass. "Well, maybe at the time you did. I was taken aback by your forwardness. That happens to me a lot."
"Apology accepted."
Aurore put down her glass of wine and fixed her gaze on Solange again. "How can I not when I'm being treated to such unforeseen hospitality?" She narrowed her eyes. "Are you Solange Garceau's twin sister?
Am I being filmed with a hidden camera?"
Solange gave a small chuckle. "I understand the confusion, but I don't have a twin, and I would never film anyone without their explicit consent." Solange lowered her glance, then looked up at Aurore again. "I understand why it would feel like I'm putting on an act, and I guess I am in a way, but this is who I am when I'm at home. Which is why I invited you here, to show you a different side."
"Why?"
Aurore didn't mean to be rude, but she had to pierce through this facade so she could find out what the purpose of it was. "I'm trying to broker a deal. Can't you tell?"
"I got an inkling.
but this is not how I imagined you brokering a deal.
This is not just any kind of deal.
Her face tightened, revealing the other Solange.
Things are not good at the Élysée right now. The president is not, how shall I put it, in the best of moods now that Stephanie has moved out. We're preparing a state visit from a head of state she's not fond of, and she's faffing about regarding this bill. I can't do much about Stephanie or about the woman-hating, farcical president of a friendly nation visiting, but I believe I can help with the bill.
And you need my help with that.
Solange nodded.
Before we get down to business, can you honestly tell me you had no part in the president and Steph's split?
Solange scoffed.
You know I can't say that. I don't know the details of the fight that broke them up, but I'm pretty certain my name was mentioned. Stephanie and I, it has never worked.
As I understand it, she apologized to you, after which you showed the president that video of me.
Aurore pursed her lips together.
Solange may try to blindside her by sitting barefoot across from her and pouring a vintage year wine, and maybe it worked for a minute or two.
But Aurore was beginning to see through it.
That's true. I stand by the fact that the president should not be linked to a person engaging in such acts in a video that is freely available for anyone to see on the internet.
But, excuse me.
Aurore couldn't keep her voice from shooting up.
To find that video, you have to explicitly look for it. Open an account on some shady website and put in your credit card details. It's not as straightforward as typing in my name plus the word porn. There are hurdles, which you were more than willing to jump over.
Of course, because it's my job to protect the president.
So you keep saying. Look how it turned out.
Aurore needed another sip of wine.
You cornered Steph. Maybe you got what you wanted all this time, only to realize it wasn't really what you wanted. Maybe the president is holding you personally responsible for Steph leaving. Maybe that's why I'm really here.
Solange shook her head.
I never wanted Stephanie to leave, contrary to what you believe, or what I made you and Stephanie believe. I know she makes the president happy. She's a royal pain in my ass because she never does what I advise her to do. And I do sometimes suspect she takes great pleasure in defying me, just for the sake of it. But any fool, even someone as bitter-hearted as me, can see they're good together.
Bitter-hearted? That's quite a way to describe yourself.
I know what my reputation is. Bitter-hearted is one of the nicest things being said about me.
True.
Solange tilted her head, a question in her eyes.
I say things as they are. But before you ask me to give you a list of the things I've heard you being called, I refuse to let our conversation go that way.
Solange shook her head.
Trust me, I wasn't going to ask you about that. It's just that not a lot of people are willing to risk my wrath by speaking the truth. I suspect Stephanie would, if she didn't have to take Dominique into account.
You're the only one in a while, Solange grinned.
Since I've arrived, you behave like a pussycat, so I really don't think there's that much wrath to face. I'm more worried about mentioning a certain word again and being promptly shown the door.
Aurore tried to chuckle. I'll give you that one. Solange fell silent. Maybe she had to swallow her next remark.
For the record, I've come to know Steph as a very kind, very intuitive, very smart woman, with a massive chip on her shoulder.
A chip in the shape of me, Solange said.
Oh, yes, Aurore said. Have you considered apologizing to her?
No.
Solange's reply came quickly and clearly.
I can't compromise my position.
What position might that be?
I need to demand a certain amount of respect, even from the president's partner. Otherwise, I can't do my job properly.
And you can now, while Steph and Dominique are at war. Mainly because of you.
I get that you and Stephanie have become fast friends, and that you'll keep on defending her, but I've done nothing wrong. And Stephanie Matisse is not the reason I asked you here.
Get to the point then, please. I'm not sure I'll be staying much longer.
It had all been an act. Solange didn't have a softer side to her, only a craftier, sly one.
Now you're no longer in the right mood to hear my proposal.
Aurore fixed her gaze squarely on Solange. I pride myself on not judging people and always giving them the benefit of the doubt, but you are.